This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I thought guys were going to lead with the Yankees, and Aaron Boone addressed the media, and Brian Cashman addressed the media. And then about 15 minutes ago, Chris, we find out that the Atlanta Falcons shutting down their facility. Their game is now in question this week against the Minnesota Vikings. So all hell continues to break loose around COVID and the NFL. But before we get there, let's say good morning. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rico. I'm doing well. How are you guys this morning?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day outside. I don't give the weather anymore, but it's a beautiful day outside, and I'm excited for the day.
Well, if you didn't ask so many freaking questions before and observations, you could give the weather.
Please.
Ridiculous.
Please, really. I mean, you're embarrassing yourself. Santiago says, as we're talking to Graziano yesterday, make sure you're out by 41, okay? Please make sure you're out by 41. 41 hits. Can't DS his last question. We're right on time. Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hang on a second, you say. I have another question.
Yeah, but by the way, how relevant is that question now that I asked it with what happened with Atlanta today?
No one has ever doubted the validity or relevance of the questions you ask. It was more of a timing issue. We didn't really have the time, and you just said, I'm going to continue along. So don't blame me for your missteps.
Ends up being perfect timing, though, doesn't it? Ask Dan the question. Dan answers it, which, again, the answer makes no sense. The NFL is so full of it, and then you have Atlanta have the outbreak today, and it looks like their game's going to have to be rescheduled this weekend.
Probably so. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, look, Florida football, University of Florida, they shut down days after they say they pack any stadium in the state of Florida. And now the Atlanta Falcons are going to have to shut down. We don't even know if it's players or coaches or staff or personnel or who it is, but we know that they're not going to be able to have that facility open for days now. And like you said, they're probably not going to be able to play this game on Sunday.
Well, to say that they're probably going to shut their facility down doesn't mean that it has to be open first.
That's a good point. I mean, you make an excellent point.
Don't look like they're doing much work at their facility based on their on-the-field record. Just saying.
They've been virtual the entire time.
You ain't got to practice to do what the Falcons been doing.
We haven't been really. Our body's been at the facility, but
I'm sorry I got to be that guy, but God, maybe they could benefit from it. We see what happened to the Tennessee Titans when they only got two practice days. Maybe the Falcons need more of that.
Played an amazing game on Monday.
I'm just telling you. I don't know. Right. But no, listen, man, in all seriousness, we knew that the NFL was going to struggle to kind of keep a lid on this thing without having a bubble. Like we said, okay, either you're going to go full bubble like the NBA did or try to do a modified bubble similar to what teams do during training camp. And if you didn't take that route, then it was going to be hard to insulate the players, the staff members, all NFL personnel from the effects of COVID. I mean, we're living in a COVID world right now. We're at the mercy of the virus. And unless you have drastic measures to try to protect everybody, keep everybody safe, and limit the transmission of the virus, then you're probably going to be dealing with these situations and having to, you know, postpone or reschedule games. And God forbid, you know, if this continues to trend in the direction that we've seen the last couple of weeks, you're probably going to have to cancel games. So this is so frustrating. Everybody says that a modified bubble is so unrealistic, and I can't understand where they're coming from, because you've seen teams throughout the course of training camp, which spans about a month and a half, where teams have players put in hotels that are nearby their practice facilities, and the players go from the facilities to the hotels and back. I don't understand why that's not feasible for this scenario. Everybody understands sacrifices have to be made based on what we're dealing with. Even if that means you have to be cooped up in a hotel for a couple of months, I think it's worth it if that means the difference between you getting checks and not getting checks. And also keeping in mind what's at stake this coming season with the media rights deals being negotiated between the owners and the television companies. Just saying, that's the backdrop to everything that's going on during this NFL season. So I just feel like the two sides, the NFL and the players, they need to huddle up. They need to get together and truly think about trying to take the modified bubble approach.
Yeah, this has been worse than baseball. I mean, when baseball initially went with the Marlins ended up having the outbreak, and then you had the Cardinals. But, I mean, outside of those two teams, right. I mean, the Major League Baseball did a really good job, and they ended up bubbling up for the playoffs. But, I mean, this continues to happen. I mean, at the college level, and it's happening at the NFL level.
But isn't that what our fear was? I mean, if you said what sport is going to have trouble, it would make sense that it's the NFL. They have the most people involved.
But it's different,
it doesn't
though,
feel like the trouble is the transmission of the virus between the two teams when they're playing the games on Sunday. Like, that's the part that we kind of misread a little bit. I was the first one to say there's so much contact on game day. You're in proximity to these guys. I know a game clock is technically only 60 minutes, but you're hitting these guys for 3 hours. And so if you have somebody that's infected, chances are they're going to transmit the virus to somebody else that they're playing against. But that hasn't been what's going on. It feels like it's what's happening in the outside world
100%. That's
infiltrating the facility in the locker rooms. And so to me, if it's not something that's taking place on the field in terms of the transmission of the virus, then you got to try to protect your players from what's happening in the outside world.
And depending on the report you read, I mean, it could just be the virus. It could be the fact that the virus has mutated where it's more transferable now. Because I was reading a study this morning. Yep. I mean, they published a study. I think they said 70% of the people that have tested positive for COVID have actually have done their due diligence with the mask and everything else, and it hasn't apparently helped as much as they thought it was going to help. So maybe this is just, I mean, you got kids going to school, you got, you know, family members in your house and everything else. That's why the whole idea of having everyone at a hotel, everyone in each team at a hotel, that has to be safer than what's going on now. Has to be.
Well, of course.
I don't know how
is.
You can argue differently.
Well, because listen, think about this right now, right? Like for me, for you, Rick. I mean, right now I'm at home, and then my kids are going to school, and then they come home and they're interacting with other kids, and then they come home, and then, you know, we go out and we're out and about doing a lot of stuff. But I mean, we go for walks, like we do stuff. So yeah, if you're locked away in a hotel and it's hotel practice game, rinse and repeat, hotel practice game, you like your chances. But my understanding is the players and the union will have no part of that.
And maybe that's the issue, is they're not going to get the support of the union. But at some point, I mean, if I'm one of these players and I start missing game checks, like we need to, like, I'll suck it up. If I have to suck it up and stay in a hotel to make sure we get through this season and I get paid, then that's something you're going to have to do. I mean, I watched The Bachelorette last night. I mean, that's, The Bachelorette
She's crazy,
is so important.
Huh?
Oh, no, I mean, that whole thing is a mess. Dale's definitely playing her too. She falls in love with Dale. He's clearly playing her. He wants to be, he's a model and everything else. Stop. You can't be that young and that good looking and you got to go and you're trying to marry a 39-year-old bachelor. Stop, please. No, ridiculous. But I mean, The Bachelorette's so important to ABC that they rented out an entire hotel, have all these guys fly in, quarantine them, and test them every single day so they can have the show go. I mean, the NFL is more important, I'm sorry, than The Bachelorette. Like, you gotta, I mean, for the amount of money that we're talking about here, like, at a certain point, you can't with a straight face tell me that having all the players and staff at a hotel and knowing exactly who goes in and out of the hotel, everyone being tested, is less safe than having guys just go their own respective ways after practice.
Yeah, that's definitely not the way to go. Like, that you cannot argue that that's safer, because you know that there are going to be some guys that don't think it's real, or even if they get COVID, they're not worried about how it's going to affect them in the short term or the long term. I mean, listen, we got people like that in our society that think that we don't have people like that that think in the National Football League. You're kidding yourself.
Like, oh, especially, you know, but Chris, like, especially as these teams start to, I mean, the Falcons, I mean, especially as these teams continue to lose games, you don't think now all of a sudden, our season's over, we ain't making the playoffs. That you started, guys on these teams don't ease up a little bit?
I'm sure
how
they
closely
do.
They fall on the protocol?
Oh, yeah, like the Jets and the Falcons, of 100%. Of course they do. Of course they do. Their attention is elsewhere. It's not focused on doing the right things and following all of the protocols to a T. It's about showing up, punching the clock, getting a check. And whatever happens is what happens. They don't care about it. But the NFL can't afford to have people like that to have that attitude. You can't afford to leave them up to their devices. Which is why I feel like you got to isolate the players, man. You do. I mean, I understand the PA is going to push back on it, but this is one of those things where, you know, the players have got to take the long-term approach and the long-term view of this thing. You can't afford to have games canceled. You can't afford to take away leverage from the owners when they're negotiating the television rights for the next 10 years. Like, you just can't do that. I don't understand. I get it. You're talking about a lot of time being spent away from your family. But you're also talking about making a whole lot of money in a time where there's economic uncertainty for every single American. So, I mean, you know, when you're in that position of privilege, I just think there are certain sacrifices that you have to make. And if you're a player, this is probably going to have to be one of them. You think LeBron James wanted to be cooped up in the NBA bubble for 3 months?
No, of course
no.
not.
No, of course
sure
he didn't. But he recognized
to.
That's what he had to do for the benefit of the game, not only this year, but for years to come. I don't understand why the NFL players can't take that same approach, why they don't have that same mentality. And I get it. You're talking about four times as many players in the NFL than you have in the NBA. I get it. But it's not like the National Football League doesn't have the resources to be able to accommodate him. Because, again, pretty much every team puts their players in a dorm room or a hotel during training camp. So it's not like we haven't seen it. It's not like they don't know how to do it. So
yeah, but on
I
top of that,
Timmy,
Chris, to your point, though, I mean, that's why it makes no sense to me to listen to Dr. Sill say it's not safer. I mean, you talk about what would you have to isolate on each team? You know, over 100 staff and players?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's 20, about like that ballpark, yeah.
Okay, so those same 100 or whatever it ends up being, staff and players, are going back and forth to the facility and going home. So you take those 100 and then multiply it by how many people are in those people's houses that you're now bringing into the equation. Because not everyone's staying. You think that all these families are staying home and everything? No.
No.
Absolutely
no,
not.
No way.
So stop it. So it's got to be safer to be in a hotel.
I mean, don't you have friends now? Like, you have friends that are taking it seriously and are locked away and won't do anything. And then I'm sure we all have friends that are like, you know what? I believe it's true, but, you know, I'm past that. I'm going to go out and kind of live my life.
They got COVID fatigue, Dave. They want to go out to dinner. They want to be around, you know, they want to socialize. Like, people are tired of being cooped up in their houses, and I get it. But that still doesn't, you know, your COVID fatigue doesn't protect you from the effects of the virus.
Oh, I think it's ridiculous. But I'm just saying, we all know people who are saying, you know what, I have to start to do some stuff. So if we have that, then I'm sure players in the NFL have that, and some of them are doing that as well.
I'm sure there's players, not just their families and friends. I'm sure there's players that are just sick of it. And on top of that, I got people that, you know, seem like they're actively trying to hunt down COVID and get it the way that they act. But, I mean, I think it's starting to be proven now, too, that even if you're taking the precautions when you're going about your regular day, if you have to go to work or whatever it is, that you're still, I mean, there still is a good chance that you're going to be around someone that has it. And even if you're, you know, got the mask on and everything else, you could still get it. That's how contagious this thing is right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, Nick Saban has it.
And apparently Nick Saban has said that he's been as diligent as humanly possible with the mask and social distancing. And it seems like just the more you're in, you know, inside around, you know, other people with a person that could be asymptomatic and carrying it, I mean, you have a pretty good chance of getting it. The outdoor transmission playing football doesn't seem like it's as big a deal as we thought. But just with the amount of time these guys spend in proximity to each other inside is turns out it's a problem. It's clearly a problem. And I don't know. I mean, there's no perfect way to fix it. You're going to have to, I mean, I think week 18 is probably on the table to try to make up some of these games.
Right.
Or if you add a bye week, you know, I mean, the last bye week is week 13. Maybe if you add another bye week and try to fit some games that you need to make up during that bye week and the other teams get off. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a team that has the bye having that many weeks off before their first game. If you do add the week 18, yeah, maybe you try to do something like that. But I don't know if you can keep going down this road.
Yeah, keep adjusting the schedule. And, okay, now you're not going to play this week, so we'll adjust this team to play you this week, and then we'll switch it around like this. It's just it's a lot. It's daunting. And to think that we're going to get this schedule in 17 weeks is just I think it's very unrealistic at this point. Now, truth be told, if the Falcons and Vikings never play this game, is it that big a deal? It might not matter. Mm-hmm. But we're going to get to games that, if they don't happen, will matter, and then that's going to be a big deal in the NFL.
Yeah, but financially it matters, though, too. I mean, what was it? What was the number we had? $24 million a game?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what it ends up being? So, I mean, wouldn't you rather spend the money or do a deal? Or even if you barter a deal. I mean, all these teams are capable of bartering deals. With whatever hotel you have, you barter a deal. Listen, you know, we're going to stay here. We're going to have the whole hotel. And then for the next, you know, X amount of years, you'll have free advertising with the team.
Of course.
Yeah, the official hotel of the Atlanta Falcons.
Exactly right.
Or you get a big banner at the stadium. I mean, it's easy to figure that stuff out.
And we saw it. I mean, we've seen it work. The NBA and NHL did it perfectly. And it didn't have to be one big bubble. Teams are capable of, with everything they have at their beckoning call, with how much money each team has, they could make something like that work. They could.
I just go back to the training camp setup, Rick. I mean, every team has that. I mean, didn't we see what happened with the Seattle Seahawks? They had a player that tried to sneak a girl into his room because she was dressed like a staffer. but that's what I'm saying. But that's how. But they had it set up. Like, there's no way that you catch that person doing that unless you have the security, unless you have players under, you know, restriction and under watch, and they can do that. That's the way of the world when it comes to training camps. So I don't understand why you couldn't apply that to the remainder of the regular season. I mean, you're almost a third through the regular season, right? Is it too much to ask the players for the next 12 weeks, this is what our game plan is going to be?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Right? So you're looking at 3 months. And no one is denying it stinks. It stinks. But there's a lot going on that stinks in this world right now. And you have a job, and you'll be getting paid, and you get paid pretty well. So,
and here's the thing, Dave. If you actually have a bye week, okay, we'll let you go about your business on your bye week. You'll have an entire week off. You come back, you get COVID tested, and boom, you're back into the modified bubble. I don't understand how that can't be a realistic scenario for the NFL.
Yeah, look, the NBA did it. It was great. The NHL did it. It was great. Major League Baseball has done it in the postseason. It is working seamlessly. It just feels like we are there.
Yeah, but here's the one thing, though, to take into account, and this may be part of why they haven't done it yet, is that NHL and NBA, players don't get paid for the playoffs. So the owners aren't, I mean, there's no fans, and the owners aren't paying players.
Like, players don't really get paid in the NFL in the playoffs either, though.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. They get paid game checks. So if there's no, I mean, if maybe the owners are willing to miss games with no fans because it costs them more to pay the players in those games because they're not making as much money with no fans. And the NFL is king anyway, so they don't feel like it's going to affect their negotiation with all these different, you know, different entities that want the games anyway. Maybe that's part of it. Like, if we miss a week, we miss a week. At least I don't have to pay my players.
Right.
I'm not making any money from, you know, attendance.
Yeah. Listen, if the Falcons don't play this week, you think Arthur Blank is heartbroken?
Probably not.
I mean, they're 0-5.
Season, they're 0-5. And if Roger Goodell's telling them, hey, listen, if we miss some games, we got the election. I mean, there's it's the pandemic. I mean,
there's plenty of things you could actually blame it on, and you could try to, you know, explain those away at the bargaining table. But my whole thing is this: if it didn't affect the bottom line, then why is everybody talking about how the salary cap is going to drop precipitously in 2021? Talking about the cap being $30 to $40 million less than it is right now. So clearly, not playing games would affect it. Clearly, not having
fans.
Well,
I think isn't that an excuse too to pay less money? I mean, that's also working in the owner's favor. Well, I can't spend the money. I mean, that's the beauty of a cap. We want to spend it. We just can't do it. I mean, there's a salary cap. I'd love to spend all the money in the world. I just can't do it. Cap's 175. Come on, you've been in those rooms.
No, I'm with you. I hear you. I hear where you're coming from. I feel like it's in the benefit of everybody if you can try to play as many of these games as you possibly can.
Of course
just
it
to
does.
Show just to show the true value of what you're bringing to the table under the circumstances. Because people are starved for live content right now. I mean, there's only so much, you know, CNN, Fox News you can watch leading up to the election.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's 20 days. Time we'd actually have NBA and NHL, and we don't have that.
But that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, people are looking for, you know, some live entertainment, something to be that welcome distraction, and the NFL is king when it comes to sports. So I just feel like the more games you can play, the more value you can show that you actually have to these media entities. That's all I'm saying. Not to say that they don't already recognize the value, but you were talking about the national television rights deals doubling before we got into this pandemic situation. That's why the players and the owners were in such a hurry to get this CBA knocked out so the owners could go to the television companies and sell labor peace for the next decade. They were talking about it going from $8 billion Dastly to $16 billion. All I'm saying is if you play as many games as you possibly can, that only puts you in a position of strength. That's it. That was my only point.
No, listen, I think in a perfect world, you're probably right. But I don't even know how much negotiating the NFL has to do with all the different platforms that want their product. Seriously, I mean, the NFL really is.
And then all the different
But that's a big jump you're trying to make, though, Ricky. You're trying to double your national television rights deal.
But how many times have we seen it? We spent how long talking about how stupid the Wilpons were for turning down the $2.6 billion? Then you hit the pandemic hit. And like, oh, they're not good. Yeah, how many experts said, oh, they're going to lose at least $600 million? They end up going for $2.4 billion still.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, when it's as attractive as the NFL is,
there's a lot of outlets now. There's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's a lot of different outlets that are going to want to be involved with the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with the NFL package too. I mean, it's coming up on DirecTV too.
Well, is Amazon trying to get in on it as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, ESPN wants
to be involved in some way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just because the only reason why what we've suggested with the modified bubble isn't being done right now is because clearly we're over overvaluing how important it is to the owners to be playing these games. That's the only reason. It could be the only reason. Because you've already seen it work. It worked with the NBA, yep. And it worked with the NHL.
Beautifully. NHL was perfection.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just, if this continues to happen, at some point, you can only reschedule so many games.
Right. And, yeah. And it feels like
I guess that was my point. Like, if you were trying to protect the integrity of the season and make sure that as many of these teams played all 16 as you possibly could, then why wouldn't you go to a modified bubble? Like, there's really no good reason why you wouldn't do it.
Except that the players in the union don't want it. But you're right.
And that's fine, Dave, but just come out and say that. Don't throw out, well, it's a logistics nightmare and it's not possible.
Or it's as safe to do what we're doing as it is.
The buzz phrase is, I don't think it's realistic. No, stop that. It's realistic. It's doable. Because you already do it in the preseason. It's doable. We all know that. So if you're saying we just don't want to do it from a quality of life standpoint, the players don't want to do it, and the owners don't want to invest the resources, okay, fine. We'll drop the whole subject. But don't say it's unrealistic. Don't say from a logistics standpoint we just can't do it, because that's not true.
It's just not
true. Don't lie to me.
Yeah, well, they do that often in the NFL. Let's get to some of the calls.
But Dave, you know what, too? All the sports, I mean, NHL, NBA, I mean, NHL, you're at the rink for – you know, a couple hours. You go, I mean, you'll practice, you'll watch the video, and then you're back to your hotel. NBA, same thing. The NFL, you're at the facility the whole day anyway.
The whole day.
I mean, you really go back to the hotel, Ricky. Just to sleep. That's it.
Ricky, from 7 to 4:30, 5 o'clock, you're there.
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, that day, even when you're going back and forth to home, you're barely home.
No.
I mean, you're home, you see your wife and kids, I mean, put your kids to bed, then you're back at the facility early in the next morning.
Yep. And you can do it in training camp, so it's a little more. It's
got to be financial. Then, Dave, it's got to be financial then. This has got to be something that the owners don't want to pony
up. You think
up
it's
for.
Financial, or you think it's just they just don't want to?
Well, the only reason why they wouldn't want to is because it doesn't make sense financially for them to do it. Because I guess maybe it's cheaper for them to miss a game. Like they're already past the whole integrity of the game thing. Like, that's okay, we can live with if we got to go winning percentage. So if we have to miss a game and I don't have to pay my players a game check, that makes more sense than me doling all this money for a bubble. Because why else wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, but if you're a player, why would you even jeopardize that? Why would you even bring into question whether or not you're going to get all of your game checks? Like, that's the part that I don't understand. Like, if you're on the player side, hey, man, let's go to this bubble. I need to get all my checks.
That's where the union needs to all of a sudden, like, DeMora Smith needs to be out in front of this and start preaching, we need a bubble.
Yeah, but
baseball does the same thing.
But Ricky D. Smith works for the players, and if the players say they don't want it, if the executive committee meets and the board of player reps meets, and they say they don't want it, there's only so much that D can do.
But baseball's sneaky like that too. Baseball waited till the playoffs too, when they ain't paying the players.
When the game exactly when the owners are raking in that pile of cash and they don't have to split it.
They're all sneaky. All these owners always win. Let's go to the calls. Let's go to Josh in State College. Josh, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good morning, Josh.
So the thing that I don't understand is there's no other events going on. So all these stadiums are available. The NFL has Tampa booked for the entire month of February to move to the Super Bowl. Why don't we just stop for 2 weeks, lock everyone down so we clear whatever's in the systems out, and during that 2 weeks, the PA and the league sit down, and the league says, look, this clearly isn't working. If you don't want to lose game checks, we got 2 weeks to figure out some sort of modified bubble and put it on the players. If they're going to hold fast and say, no, we're not doing this, then the NFL says, fine, we're saving money by not paying you and not playing games.
Well, because the fear is that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, why am I going to shut down, though?
You're not going to shut down because it's not going to matter. You clear the system. It's not. I mean, you're clearing what? I mean, guys, this is the fear is this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Right.
So get as many games as you can in before maybe you do have to shut it down, because it just gets to the point where, I mean, maybe the state's shutting you down.
Right, you might legitimately have to shut down in a month or 6 weeks. If I can get the Giants-Washington game in this weekend, why in the world will I shut down for 2 weeks when almost every game can and should be played this weekend? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes no sense. I mean, you've seen the same thing in college football, too. I mean, how many people has Nick Saban been around? Like, the fact that they're even considering playing the game this weekend.
I think they're going to play that game.
Well, exactly right, but how does that make any sense?
Well, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Well, how does it make sense they were going to have 90,000 people at the game for Florida, and they can't even play the game because all the Florida Gators have COVID?
That's that because that's Florida. That's a different. I mean, that's a different country.
Oh,
they should. I mean, that's
infuriating.
It's amazing, man.
We gotta pack the swamp.
You know, I got family that live in Florida.
Oh, I know you do.
I mean, it's so
pack the swamp.
They're trying to get. They're putting their head down. They're going to try to get as many of these games in as they can before you know other.
Before their hand.
Well, it even could be. Yeah, but exactly right. But it could. It may be the state shut them down. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if these things start to spike up again, you'll start getting the state will just shut it down. So I mean I don't know. I'm getting all these stories.
We don't know. That's the truth. That's the truth. Clay and Brooklyn.
I'm trying to deal with my.
Go ahead.
No. I'm trying to. I'm sitting here every day trying to figure out this high school schedule too. And I'm getting emails like I got one referee in Maine that apparently had COVID, so he exposed like 400 different people to COVID.
Oh,
like
now when is that season supposed to start?
Dude, it's like the Wild West, man.
But supposed to. When is it supposed to start?
The beginning of November it's supposed to start.
So, I mean, we're talking about 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
And what? Where are we with that? Is it going to start?
Well, no. I mean, New Jersey just opened it up that you can compete in New Jersey. So hockey, indoor high-risk sports can compete. But the problem with us is now, like, so if you were to, like, for our school, if our travel guys were to go play in a different state, they can't come back to school until they quarantine for 14 days.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
So then, in actuality, how realistically is that season going to happen?
We don't know. We won't know until Governor Cuomo comes out with his edict on what they're going to do for high.
So you're just in a holding pattern now?
Yeah, because right now we can't compete. Like New York, the Junior Islanders just shut down for 2 weeks, just because all these different teams were traveling, and then as they traveled, they come back, and one or two of the kids would end up with COVID, so they'd have to shut down anyway. So they're trying to shut down for 2 weeks, and hopefully that. That decreases the spread and everything else, but it just keeps. It's every single week, something pops up.
And the season goes from what? Early November till when?
Early November to. I don't know, I mean, when did we finish last year? We shut down for Christmas, February, I think.
All right. So could
I got
they?
Ice? But I got ice booked till June. No, seriously. So in case I have to push it, like because we're still talking our league games are out of state. Like, how are we getting the kids? Like, do we have to take multiple buses? Like, how are we getting the kids to these games? Like, is it fair if the kids come back to expose the rest of school to, you know, to our guys that have been traveling and everything else? It's logistically a nightmare.
It's an absolute nightmare.
Because a lot of these kids don't have any symptoms, man. So they don't even know. They're just walking around. They have no idea. And if you have no symptoms, why are you getting tested? You wouldn't get tested. I mean, it's incredible, man.
It's
one
crazy.
Thing after another.
It's crazy.
Oh, but it's crazy. But that's what freaks me out, though. These guys, college football players get tested every single day. How many times do we hear, oh, the safest place for these guys to be is in the facility? Well, that's obviously
apparently
not.
Apparently not.
So if you can't keep it out of there,
But I will say this.
It feels like regular sports.
It feels like the NFL is taking COVID a lot more seriously than college football is.
I agree.
College football feels like it's the Wild Wild West.
Well,
like,
because it is.
Whatever
exactly
happens.
What
and then if there's a significant outbreak, then we'll deal with it when it happens. But how in the world do you have a situation where you have 18 players on your team test positive? 18? You can't be following the protocols and social distancing and having guys properly spread out in the locker room if you've got 18 guys that test positive.
And how many teams have we seen not be able to play in college football? Right?
Yeah.
Because it's run rampant throughout the facility or throughout the team. I mean, Notre Dame and Florida, and I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
I don't think they're worried about it. I mean, you heard Ed Orgeron. Oh, I think all our guys have had it.
All our guys have had it.
Yeah, so we can't get it again. Oh, great. Thanks. That's perfect, Ed.
Right. By the way, woman,
that's
I think
the right
in
attitude,
Europe,
Ed.
Woman in Europe contracted it a second time and just passed away. I don't know if you saw that.
Dude, I was going to do a story yesterday on observations. Apparently, one of the new side effects of COVID is this guy lost hearing in one of his ears.
Jesus.
And Fred Dean passed away.
Dude, but that's what freaks me out the most, man, is no one has given a definitive answer of like long-term ramifications.
Because they don't know.
But that's what freaks me out. Like all of a sudden you get willy-nilly and you catch it, you got no symptoms, you're fine, and then, 5 years down the road, you got all sorts of problems with your lungs or something. I don't want to deal with that.
Of course you don't want to. Nobody wants to
deal with it. You got enough problems.
Completely off topic. Chris, I was watching this. Did you see this new football league? It's like the American 7 Football League where they play
with
no
pads. Yeah, where they don't
have
any pads on, but it's like full contact.
Oh, my. And it's full contact.
Yeah, it's full contact, no pads. Yeah, I saw that.
That's crazy.
I don't know what you want me to say, Dave. I'm not signing up for it.
That is, people.
But Dave, how many guys get together like the morning of Thanksgiving and have the turkey bowl?
Tons, like, but do they have full contact?
Especially if it's muddy out. Of course, we ain't soft like you.
What do you mean? Do they have full contact?
Like this?
What are you talking about?
You playing patty cake?
Chop blocks in this?
I think chop blocking is still illegal, Dave. It's the same as rugby. I mean, have you seen the size of the rugby guys? They're humongous,
crazy.
Wasn't Jordan Mayata a rugby guy from Australia, and he just came over to play left tackle for the Eagles?
Yeah,
that guy was 6'8", 340 pounds.
Dude, these guys are just, I mean, fast and thick, full speed, just lowering shoulders.
No fear,
dude. No fear, crazy. But you got to take. I guess the thinking is you got to take your head out of it, though, right? Helmet on. I ain't sticking my head in there.
I don't know. You should see the video of these highlights.
Gotta leave with your head,
Rico.
Gotta leave with your head.
That's a good point.
Crazy.
Words to live by. I got a t-shirt like that.
Great. Jordan Renan will join us right at 10 o'clock. A very important game for the Giants on Sunday. Cannot afford to drop to 0-6 and lose at home to a putrid Washington football team. Chris, you agree with that?
Yeah, you can't lose to the Washington football team, Dave. You just can't. Kyle Allen, Alex Smith, doesn't matter. You can't lose to the Washington football team. They're awful.
Dreadful.
They're awful.
A putrid team. Yeah.
I still don't understand how they beat the Eagles in week one. How did that happen?
And they trailed 17-0.
That's what I'm saying. How did that happen? I'm going back to that. Like, as bad as they are,
well, The Eagles are not exactly, you know, murderer's row on the gridiron, right?
No, they're not. But still, like, to be that bad where you got a double-digit lead and you still lose to Washington?
Bad.
I don't know. Yeah, if the Giants lose this one, I don't know what to say, Dave.
Yeah, if the Giants lose this one,
I already got rid of all the optimism I had for the Giants. I told you that. I'm off the bandwagon. I'm off the train. Like, I was like, oh, this is a different team. They're more competitive, yada, yada, yada. You're still winless through the first 5 weeks.
They stink.
At some point, you got to have something to show for all of this culture change and this new administration, this new regime under Joe Judge. You got to have something to show for it.
It's bad. Jordan Renan will join us right at 10 o'clock. Clay in Brooklyn. Clay, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show. I wanted to talk about the possibility of canceling NFL games. I keep hearing people talking about the playoff implications, but there's a couple of other implications I don't hear anybody talking about that I think are just as big. One is that, and Chris, you'll be able to explain this better, the likely to be earned and not likely to be earned aspects of players' contracts that are going to be seriously impacted if they don't play all 16 games, and the draft, because the draft, like, let's say the Giants wind up 1-12 and they only get 13 games in, and the Jets wind up 0-14. So,
well, what would you think, Clay? If the Giants wind up 1-12 and the Jets wind up 0-14, who would you think would get the top selection?
What I'm just saying is that this is not fair.
I'm not sure that was the best example.
Okay, fine. My point is that the Jets could have won those last two games and wound up 2-14, and the Giants could have lost them and wound up 1-15. So it's still undecided.
Yeah, but you still go winning percentage.
Yeah, but you can't just go winning.
If you've won zero games, your winning percentage is zero.
But there's also strength of schedule. So if those games
I understand what you're saying. We all understand what you're saying. I get it. I mean, there are going to be some teams, if you start canceling games and teams don't play a full 16, forget about who gets a draft pick. I mean, how your playoffs are going to be concerned and everything else. I mean, if the team's won zero games and the other team's won one game, the team with the zero wins is going to get the first overall pick.
Obviously.
Yes.
You imagine that the Jets went 0-14, though, and say the Falcons went 0-15, and the Falcons got the number one overall pick?
Yes.
That would be the Jetsiest thing to happen, though, wouldn't it? It would be.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
It really would be. It really would.
Yeah, it's just like Daniel Jones throwing that extra touchdown pass that was supposed to just carry all
great.
That momentum.
Yeah, because that's turned out beautifully so far.
Into year two.
I told you, I mean, Don's take on that was so aggravating. That it's going to carry over, that all of a sudden this is going to be the burgeoning breakthrough for Daniel Jones.
Not at all.
Does it carry over? Nothing carries over in the
obviously.
NFL.
I mean, how many people were Jets 6-2 to finish the season. That's going to carry right over.
But, I mean, I don't understand. It doesn't carry over in the NFL. Why do we even have that discussion?
I have no idea.
It's ridiculous.
Because it's something like people in the media like to bring up. But it is.
Stupid.
It's fodder. For the offseason, chum that you can throw to fan bases.
finish.
Let me ask you this question, Dave, because this is not something that we've talked about. I mean, everybody's talked about the possibility of if the Giants get the number one overall pick, would they go with Trevor Lawrence? I think that's an obvious answer. But if the Giants have the second or third overall pick, do you move off of Daniel Jones for Justin Fields or Trey Lance?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I guess it depends on what happens the rest of the season. But I mean, I think that if you're in that position, the rest of the season has gone terribly wrong.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
If you wind up with the second pick in the draft, Chris, you probably have gone 2-14. Right? Like horrendous.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So you go 2-14. I can't imagine Daniel Jones has given you a lot of bright spots, firstly. And secondly, does Joe Judge love Daniel Jones? We don't have the answer to that. So the honestly,
well, at least publicly, they're saying that they love him.
Okay, but what are they going to say? We don't love him?
Yeah, I mean, they have to. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, they absolutely have to. But I'm just saying, like,
I don't know. Is my answer. I have no idea. Hopefully, it doesn't come to that.
What kind of season does Justin Fields have? First of all, what kind of season does Justin Fields have?
You got to imagine he's going to have a great year. No.
Okay, he has a great year, but is he considered, you know, generational? Like Trevor Lawrence is considered generational. Like the best prospect since Andrew Luck. If that's the case, if he has such a great season, you have the second overall pick, and you've had, I mean, to have the second overall pick, you've had a terrible season, which means your quarterback wasn't very good, then you're probably going to take Justin Fields. But if Justin Fields has an okay, say, he has a good season, but people don't consider him like this generational talent, then, I mean, I'm sure there's a team that would love to draft Justin Fields, and, I mean, what would you get
and
for the second overall pick?
Right. If he's an elite talent and you really do love Daniel Jones, you'd think you could make a killing on trading back in the draft. You'd think.
You'd get a ransom, probably.
Yeah, but could you pass on the
upside and the potential that a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance will bring to the table? That becomes the other question.
Like, well, if that would depend on the scouting. I mean, Trey Lance played one game this season. That's it. He's done. He played one game.
He did play one game, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
right.
So, I mean, you have to love Trey Lance and what you've seen, I mean, in his past and what he does at the combine and everything else.
Sure.
I think the reason why the conversation around Trevor Lawrence has been so easy that if you have the first overall pick is
because you've seen the sample size, like 3 years, the kid came in as a true freshman and led the team to a national championship. He's only lost one game, and he smashed all of Deshaun Watson's high school records in Georgia. Yeah,
exactly.
I get exactly what you're saying, but Justin Fields threw for over 3,000 yards last year and had 41 passing touchdowns.
So did Dwayne Haskins.
Ohio State.
Yeah, but Dwayne Haskins was a one-year starter, and Dwayne Haskins was a guy that was limited to mobility within the pocket. Justin Fields is where the NFL is going in terms of quarterbacks and athleticism.
No, listen, I'm not arguing with you about how good
Justin Fields is not limited to the type of offense to a certain type of offense.
No, which is correct. All I'm saying is I would wait to make adjust until I see Justin Fields play this season. Mm-hmm. I can't give you a definitive answer as to what I would do with the second overall pick.
I think that's fair.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Because I think he's great. I'll admit I thought Dwayne Haskins was going to be great. I don't think he got put in a great situation. But, I mean, let's not forget the reason why Joe Burrow left Ohio State is because he couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins. And
yeah,
how that turned out for Joe Burrow.
Yeah, but I don't think coming into the season where Dwayne Haskins was going to be the starter for Ohio State, no one knew what to expect. Coming into this year, I mean, everybody knows what to expect from Justin Fields because we saw it last year. And if he just continues to show more of what he saw last year, then I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be the second quarterback off the board. That's just me.
Well, you're right. I just want to see it. All I'm saying is if I see what you're saying, if he has that same kind of season, if not better, then that's a real conversation.
Well, I guess the whole point is it's a quarterback star league, and quarterbacks always get pushed to the top of drafts. So if you're the Giants and you're picking in the top five again, I think it becomes a serious conversation as to what you do.
Absolutely. It has to. Because if you're picking in the top five, and if you're going to get Fields, I don't even think top five. I think you got to be picking top two or three at worst.
Agree.
You've had a horrendous season, and odds are Daniel Jones has not progressed the way you thought he would. So I think you have to realistically have that conversation, 100%.
Yeah, I would agree
with that. There is a lot of football left. There is. So we'll
how
see
embarrassing
how
is that,
out.
Though?
How much good football is left, though, Dave?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of good, but listen, the Giants could win four games, right? Like, that's not a crazy notion, is it?
No, it's not crazy, no.
Okay, so if they win four games, they're not going to get their hands on Justin Fields.
You would think not, yes.
So we'll see. Well, I mean, it's 11 games. Now, if you lose this game this weekend, all bets are off now. You're going to probably win one or two games, and it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, if you lose this game this weekend, I mean, the Jets, all of a sudden, the Jets fans become Giants fans because they're rooting for the Giants to win the game so they can make sure they get the number one pick. You're rooting for the Jets?
Oh, yeah.
No, we don't want you.
I'm all about you. We don't need you now.
No, no, we don't want you. We don't need you.
Well you clearly you don't need me.
We don't need any of those.
That might be the first time that happens in New York pro football history. Like Jets fans rooting for the Giants and Giants fans rooting for the Jets.
Yeah, Daniel Jones.
That might be a first.
Touchdowns. He'll throw for four touchdowns against the Browns in December, and it'll be that's going to carry over till next year. How wonderful
that
is.
The only fear is this, though, Dave. The only fear is this: Dave Gettleman's still your GM. You get the second overall pick. Now you got to worry about Travis Etienne being the second overall. No, pick.
Really, man? We're gonna go back to that? You're not gonna let that go? You're not gonna let that go?
Better chance of Gase or Gettleman being here next year?
Gettleman.
I don't know. I don't know. Dave.
I don't think there's any way Gettleman is.
I don't think there's any way Gettleman stays. I this whole Gase thing scares the hell out of me.
If he came back.
Something strange going on in Florham Park, man. Real strange. This Adam Gase guy is Jedi mind tricked everybody. Adam Gase is Jedi mind tricked everybody. Like everybody. He's the Sith Lord of Florham Park.
Cannot stare into those eyes, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you, man, there's something going on. It's like Prince. Don't look directly into his eyes.
Yeah, but at least the blouse is won, and then you get pancakes.
That's a fair point.
Adam Gase don't serve me nothing. Oh, after talking to all the coaches, they felt like it's me calling the plays is best for the team. Oh, really?
Come on.
Really?
We'll just continue.
Rick, you know what that was, though, Rico. You know what that was. There were coaches in there like, man, I don't want no parts of putting my name on this offense.
Absolutely
no
not.
Parts of that. This is all you.
You know what, Dave? After consulting with Milo and Ella, we came to the decision that me going to the grocery store was probably the best option. Makes the most sense.
But you flying a drone is out of the question. Out of the question.
Yeah, he's up. The poor kid, too, yesterday. I look over. I'm like, what are you doing, Milo? He's like, just looking at the drone stuck up in the tree. I'm like, do you have to just rub it in every single time we see that stupid drone?
Did he say that? I'm just looking at the drone stuck up in the tree.
Yeah, I think he goes, I think it's moved down a little bit. I was like, no, it's not. It's not moved down at all. We're not getting it. He's like, can we cut the tree down? I'm like, no.
We cut the tree down.
To get the drone, huh?
A loser I am.
You're going to replace the drone, aren't you?
Not now.
No?
He's 5 years old. What is he?
No, he looks up to that tree. He looks up in such angst.
I'm a 28-year-old man that can't fly a drone. A 5-year-old can fly a drone?
28-year-old man.
What?
Yeah, you're right. I'm not 28. I feel
like I'm about to say what?
What are you, Benjamin Button? What do you mean you're 28 years old?
Nah, CTE is acting up today, Dave. That's what it is.
I'm a 28-year-old. You thought you were going to slip that one past us? No. No. All right, let's bring him on. Mr. Positivity, Andy, in America. Morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. A beautiful Thursday. Throw you guys back onto campus. In fact, I'm taking you to a Coastal Division school of the ACC. That's right, we're going to Coral Gables, Florida for the U. Starting with, University of Miami's had two Heisman Trophy winners. Name them both.
Oof. Gino Toretta, was he one of them?
Testaverde.
Testaverde, wow.
Nice, David.
All right. The U has had one John Mackey Award winner, best tight end in college football. Name him. Mm.
So it could be Shockey. It could be Winslow. Olsen. Although Andy wouldn't go Winslow. He's so. It's just
what about Greg Olsen? Greg Olsen went to Miami.
He did.
I figure Rick's going to be all over this one.
Rick. Be Chris Herndon.
That's not even funny. Why would you even?
That is funny. That's funny.
I'll be all over this. Is that because I should be? Am I leaning Winslow?
Yeah, Kellen Winslow.
Yeah, that Andy. If that's it, I'm going to be disappointed in you. Is it Winslow?
It is Winslow.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy.
He's a soldier.
No, that's why he said me. I mean, that's why he said
no. But you're not. I mean, come
comment
on.
Here. All right. Over the last 40 years, the U has taken three coaches and moved them directly into the NFL. Name them.
Jimmy Johnson.
One.
Dennis Erickson.
Two.
Hmm.
He would have replaced Bill Belichick.
Butch Davis.
There you go. Bang. And, of course, the great Howard Schnellenberger also went to the USFL for a brief period of time. But I digress. My fourth and final question. What NFL Super Bowl champion and University of Miami alum holds the school record with 4 fumble recoveries in a single game?
Super Bowl champion.
Super Bowl champion.
So you didn't say Hall of Famer, so it's not going to be Ray Lewis.
No.
How long ago? Andy, how long ago?
It's a while ago. It's going back probably 40 years. In fact, it was 1980 against Vanderbilt.
1980 against Vanderbilt.
I could give Dave 64 shots at this, but
Jim Burt.
He's going to get it right now. Bang.
Wow, Jim Burt.
I am the smartest man alive.
Mr. Hey, fellas, spin out of a double careful. Team.
Fellas, let's be careful out there. And as always, stay healthy, boys.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you very much.
Jim Burt.
The great Jim Burt.
Wow.
He was
the
a
great Jim Burt.
Player.
I remember Jim Burt used to come to training camps, Dave.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, when I was with the Cowboys. Yeah, and Bill Parcells was out there. Oh, yeah.
He was a Parcells guy, huh?
Yeah, loved Jim Burt used to come out there all the time, man. And he used to try to teach us to spin out of double teams. And Casey Rogers would say, just ignore everything he just tried to teach you the last 10 minutes, because that's not what we do.
Who wants to spin out of a double team? Nobody.
And there we are.
Nobody.
Right. Jordan Renan going to join us in a moment. We'll get into the Yankees and what Boone and Cashman had to say yesterday, and then we'll do a little CMT. So very important hour here on DCR with you on 98.7. ESPN. Let's bring him in. Friend of the show. Everyone. He has a lot of friends. He is the great Jordan Renan. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. Yeah, you got a lot of friends. There we go. That's a new one.
I've heard. You're a very social guy and you have a lot of friends out there.
Okay. I guess I'll take that. Better to have friends than be hated.
There you go. All right. So we talked about this earlier on the show. No more, well, they were close and competed. The Giants have to win this game this weekend. I don't want to hear about, well, you know, it just came down to a play here or a play there, and Joe Judge has the respect of these guys, and Daniel Jones is making strides. I don't want to say must win because I think that's ridiculous, but this is a game the Giants need to win on Sunday.
Yeah, well, Dave, the other weeks we look at it and we say the Giants could be out-talented, right? They're not a very talented team, especially without Saquon Barkley. If we all had to sit here and guess what their win total would have been and at the beginning of the year, and you said no Saquon Barkley, we would all pick probably a pretty low number. So this was expected. But they're finally playing a team, and I'm going to make sure not to call them the R word because I've been doing that lately all week. Can't help it. But the Washington football team, you look at their roster, you look at the Giants roster, and you could at least, I mean, come away saying they're equitable. And you could even, I mean, depending on how you want to judge it, you could say the Giants have a better roster, yeah. So this is the week you need to see the results turn into a victory because, quite frankly, you look at the team on the other side of the ball, what don't they have? What's their biggest hole? They don't have a quarterback. If we want to sit here and say the Giants have a quarterback and Daniel Jones is the guy, then he should be the team that doesn't have a quarterback because the reality is if you take a big picture look at the Giants, so far this season they've lost to what? 2 backups and then Mitchell Trubisky who got benched. I mean, that's what the Giants have done so far, right? Andy Dalton, why am I drawing a blank on the other backup? Who did they face?
Nick Mullins.
And then they lost to Mitch Trubisky, who is the backup. So now you're playing, what, Alex Smith or whoever, the Washington football team is going to start. Daniel Jones needs to outplay that guy and produce a victory.
He starred in the 1987 American romantic comedy Roxanne, Jordan Renan.
Oh, God.
Where did that come from? Out of left field.
Oh, my God. By the way, great movie. Boy. Steve Martin. Great, great movie. Daryl Hannah.
Oh, my goodness.
Terrific flick. You are really, though.
This is probably my last time ever on the show.
I wouldn't blame you. Honestly, if you hung up right now and we never heard from you again, I wouldn't blame you.
Jordan, going back to the quarterback conversation, you mentioned all the backups and everything else. What right now, I mean, Canty is fed up with all the turnovers, but what is the conversation inside that building right now about Daniel Jones?
I mean, I think it's where it was at the beginning of the year, right? We just need to get him to play better. We need to get him that internal clock to move faster. Even if you look at that turnover the other day, and I'm with Chris, the turnovers, I just can't get over it. He felt the guy. He knew he was coming from behind. You got to not turn the ball over. I know he was pressured right away. I know his line is bad. But 31 turnovers in 17 starts is just ridiculous. You're talking about two turnovers a game just for your quarterback, basically. It almost gives you no chance to win if you're going to turn the ball. You're going to start the game with two turnovers from your quarterback. I mean, think about the pressure that then puts on your defense. So I think the Giants are still optimistic about Daniel Jones. They're bullish on him. Quarterbacks coach Jerry Schaplinski, he said he didn't see any panic in him. He totally believes in him. And I really do think the Giants do believe in him, that they can fix this and they can get this right, because there's still those flashes. And they see it. They see a lot, him do a lot of good. They go back and watch the tape, and they see a lot of good things. Think of that last drive alone, right? That play he made where he rolled out and threw the ball to Slayton, you're like, there you go. That's the kind of play that he can make. These are the winning kind of plays. But then on the same drive, that third down, he rolls out, and essentially he's, you know, Deion Lewis is open, and whether you want to say Lewis should have sat down or whatever it is, they're not on the same page, and it should be a completion for a first down. That drive should have still been going. He needed like 30, 25 yards at that point to get to Graham Gano's field goal range, which is pretty much everywhere right now because he's their best player on their team, and it didn't happen. So it's really just the inconsistency, and I think the organization and the coaches really believe, okay, it's our job. We can get him playing up to that level where he's more consistent. And if he's more consistent, I think everybody would believe that he can be a top-level quarterback if he could show what he does in flashes on a more consistent basis.
Well, that's not a good place to be when you're talking about the kicker being the best player on the team.
Not the first time.
How do you think you're 0-5, Chris? They're 0-5. How do you get there?
Yeah. I get it, Jordan. I get it. And listen, I know when you go back and look at the tape, it's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. But you mentioned the quarterback coach in his comments earlier this week. He said he saw nothing that would be a cause for concern. I'm sorry, but all of the turnovers that we've seen from Daniel Jones in his 17 starts is cause for concern. I don't understand why the organization is not willing to acknowledge that and at least try to hold them accountable in public. I'm sure they're saying things in private, but publicly something needs to be said about their quarterback turning the ball over at this rate.
Yeah, that's the approach that they're going to take. I mean, it's been pretty clear from the start. He is not, remember?
We're going to coddle our players? That's what we're going to do?
He wouldn't even say anybody's name for the first 4 or 3 months. He didn't name one player. He didn't even say Saquon Barkley. He wouldn't say the name Saquon Barkley, and they're going to build their offense around him. And that this was so. This is their approach. That is how they're going to handle it. I agree with you. I don't understand what's wrong about having accountability publicly. The reality is Daniel Jones knows it. So what's the point of not saying it?
That's what I don't understand. Jordan, I want to ask you a question about the Washington football team. Who's Patrick Graham's defense getting ready for? Is it Alex Smith or Kyle Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're really 100% sure. I mean, obviously they're not 100% sure.
They announced Kyle Allen was starting.
They said if he's healthy right now, he's going to be a starter, right?
He's healthy, though. Is he healthy?
If he's healthy. No, they're saying that's still a question mark.
He had full participation in practice yesterday, so I would imagine it's going to be Kyle Allen.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So there we go. We got Kyle Allen. But still, I mean, does it really matter? I mean, is Kyle Allen so much better than Alex Smith? I mean, who are they throwing out there? I mean, there's plenty of film on Kyle Allen. He started for Ron Rivera in Carolina. He is what he is. He's a guy who, quite frankly, does a lot of what Daniel Jones does. He can make a couple good plays here or there, but he turns the ball over plenty. He fumbles the ball a lot. So if I'm Patrick Graham and I'm the Giants defense, I'm looking to, and I think this will be the case, we're going to see a lot of Marcus Golden, right? He is now, ironically, think about it, the Giants didn't really want him, and now they need him. And now he's going to be playing almost 100% of the snaps, 90% of the snaps, along with Kyler Fackrell. And they're going to say to those two guys, well, we need you to make plays. And it'll be interesting. You know that I saw this, and I was kind of surprised. I was looking at the next-gen stats. Marcus Golden, who has barely played this season, right? He already leads his team in quarterback pressures.
Wow.
With
wow.
10, which isn't a great number, but, I mean, he leads the team in quarterback pressures. But that, what Patrick Graham has done is they've done a good job scheming up pressure. They have a bunch of guys with 2 sacks. They're getting sacks from different positions, inside linebacker. They're blitzing from the corners, from their slot guys, from their safeties, and bringing pressure from a lot of different directions. I think that's what you would see against Kyle Allen and the Washington football team, bringing things from different directions to try and confuse this guy.
And with the Achilles injury to Clemson's Lorenzo Carter, he's not going to be able to.
Really, Dave? Really? Really? You just couldn't let that one.
Jordan, let that one go. Is here on 98.7. Jordan.
You guys are on fire today. You guys,
yeah, we
you guys
really are.
On fire.
Andrew Thomas, I mean, you know, he started out looking decent first game, maybe two, and feels like he's heading in the wrong direction. I know that a lot of the things are against him now, you know, starting at left tackle right off the bat, no Nate Solder, no training camp, all that kind of stuff. But is there reason for worry with him, or is it just too early in rookie year and you can't be that concerned?
Nah, I mean, when you look at the performance, I think there's reason for worry. I mean, he's, by my count, given up, like, you know, more than 5 sacks, close to 7, depending on how you want to, you know, grade him out. So I don't see how you could look at that and be like, oh, sure, he's a rookie. Like, there's other rookies around the league, and, yeah, they have rough games, but he's having, you know, rough game after game after game. And I think this is actually a big week for him because, remember the last time these two teams played, the Giants won, and a lot of people actually think they lost because they won. Because the result of that was that the Washington football team got Chase Young, and the New York Giants didn't. And now instead they got Andrew Thomas. So now we're going to see the two of them matched up against each other. The noise is really going to start to build if it hasn't already about Andrew Thomas. If he goes out there and just gets dominated by Chase Young, I mean, he can't have that happen. He needs to play a good game this week. Otherwise, the pressure is going to build on him. And you know what? I'd be a little concerned that we might end up being in that Eric Flowers situation. You don't want to go there because we're still only 6 games into his career. But he's actually played at that level. I mean, you want to give the rookie a benefit of the doubt. I understand. But to be fair, he's playing at the level that Eric Flowers did his rookie year. And we all sat here and we said, he's a rookie. He's showing grit. He shows toughness. You know, but even though he's getting beat, I see potential. Well, he's got to produce it on the field.
I mean, does this just highlight? I know Giants fans and Dave in particular didn't, you know, they don't love Nate Solder or how much money you paid Nate Solder. But I mean, this really highlights, you know, how much better it would have been for the Giants if you could have had Nate Solder play left tackle and ease Andrew Thomas in at right tackle. No,
absolutely. You know what? This kind of it's kind of funny because when I bring up Eric Flowers, I don't know if you remember what happened with Eric Flowers. So his rookie year, he's supposed to be the right tackle, right? And then what happens? Will Beattie tore his, I think it was his pec, in the offseason program. So Eric Flowers then has to be thrust into left tackle, and it was just downhill from there. So, I mean, it really is a parallel situation. Really high draft pick. I mean, Andrew Thomas is even higher. You would just hope that he has the mental toughness, and I'm not sure Eric Flowers did at the time, to be able to handle the New York criticism and turn around. Instead, he kind of spiraled in the wrong direction. And that's why I think this week is a big week for Andrew Thomas, because he has been under pressure a little bit. It's the buzz is starting to build about his play, and now he gets a chance. Okay, everyone's going to be watching you this week. You against Chase Young, pick 2 against pick 4. Hold your own, play a good game, and settle it down and show them that you can bounce back, which Eric Flowers wasn't able to do.
Jordan, we saw a reaction from around the sports world to the Dak Prescott injury. What are Logan Ryan and the other Giants players saying about what happened to Dak on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, Logan Ryan after the game was really, I mean, his comments, he couldn't believe that it happened. He said he was almost defensive to the fact that, hey, it was just a normal football play. There's really nothing I can do. You could feel the remorse kind of from him, that fact that he ended up being the guy that was involved in the play. And I know they're football players and we all think they're machines and injuries just, you know, you can brush right over it, but you could tell that it affected him to see. I mean, it was gruesome, right? We're sitting there saying, and his ankle's basically facing the wrong way, and they all saw that. And I don't know, I mean, I did think it was kind of awkward. I mean, I'm sitting at home because we're watching games on TV, too, but Tony Romo, did anyone else besides me?
Yeah, we talked about it.
You know, kind of it's awkward. Not his calf, Tony. It's not
hopefully
his calf.
Hopefully it's just a cramp, Jim.
You don't want to laugh, but I mean, it was like, Tony, his ankle is facing the other direction. Like, but the Giants players, they saw that. And after the game, you could tell that, I mean, they to a man, they all came and they're like, yo, I want to send, you know, my thoughts and prayers out to Dak. And it was almost like they're like, oh, yeah, and Lorenzo Carter. Like, it's almost like that injury to Dak stood out even more. Like, Lorenzo Carter was lost for the year. They knew that, too. But the Dak injury was so gruesome, and everybody knows the situation he's in, that it just hits those guys hard because Chris, you know it. It's a fraternity, right?
Yep.
Players are a fraternity, and they watch when other players get paid. They watch that Dak Prescott has been going back and forth with the whole contract situation, and they feel for a guy when they say, oh, my God, because this is the risk, right? If you don't sign that deal, that's your risk, the injury part of it. And that's why teams have leverage in football, because you have to say, oh, am I going to take $10 million or am I going to go risk it, and my ankle could be turned the other direction, and I, you know, who knows where my career goes from there. So players really feel that, and you could tell that immediately from guys like Logan Ryan, Daniel Jones, really almost all the Giants, especially the defensive players that were standing there looking at it. And then Jason Garrett, and obviously Mark Colombo said he's really close with him, and he was just distraught, he said, basically. I'm paraphrasing, and he didn't use that word, but that he, you know, has reached out to Dak and talked to him, and he knows that he's going to come back. But you can tell it hit this team pretty hard because it was an ugly injury.
It was awful, a terrible injury. Jordan Manon with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I heard Dabo Swinney very upset about the Lorenzo Carter injury down in South Carolina as well.
You're a bad guy, Dave. You're a bad guy. This is
it's
years
so
ago.
Easy,
you're a bad guy.
Help, but I'm sorry.
You're still
sorry.
Bringing it up.
Last one from me, Joe Judge. What's your take? I mean, and the Giants' kind of internal take on him. 0-5. We know that it's been a really brutal start record wise. But what's the feeling around Giants camp as far as their young head coach is concerned?
I really do think that they like what his approach and what he's bringing to the table. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong. He's almost paying for the sins of the past, because if the Giants weren't terrible the previous 3 years, I think we would have a little different view. Sure, 0-5 is 0-5. But we are seeing progress in certain directions, right, in certain areas. I mean, the defense has been surprisingly pretty good. Yep. You know, they're without Saquon Barkley. They're playing hard. This past week, they brought everything to the table. They pulled everything out of the bag. They did a fake field goal, which was almost a touchdown. I mean, you know, so – I think there's a lot of things to like, and everyone's kind of bought it to Joe Judge. But from the outside perspective, he's almost paying a little bit for the sins of the past, because you want to say to Giants fans, be patient, right? We're getting better. The wins are going to come. But then Giants fans are sitting there, how long do we have to wait? We've been bad for 8 years, the better part of 8 years. We had one decent year in 8 years. The last 3 years, we've been god-awful. And now you have this new guy with this new regime coming in saying, hey, be patient. Look, we're getting better. I can see it. The wins are going to come. And that's a tough spot for him to be in. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Is it hard to be patient if you're a Giant fan at this point, but knowing that you think Joe Judge has them going in the right direction?
I'm sure Dave's sick of being patient.
I'm sick of it. I mean, you're right. It's not his fault. That's the thing that's frustrating. It's not his fault. He's brand new here. He shouldn't have to pay for what's been the last couple of years. But, I mean, Jordan, how many times do we have to go over there? They're 12-40 whatever since the boat trip. And Gettleman's 9-30 or whatever it is at this point. Like, yeah, it's a lot of losing, Jordan. So do I blame Joe Judge? No, you don't blame him.
This is the exact dilemma.
I know.
Yeah, but Jordan, let me ask you a question. But Jordan, last week
he's basing.
Jordan, let me ask you a question, though, and this is something that, you know, my Jets often make the mistake of doing. I mean, to Dave's point, you know, Joe Judge is kind of paying the price for, you know, the sins of everyone before him. But, I mean, Is that the case if they just had clean house and got rid of Dave Gettleman? I mean, would that still be the topic of conversation if they had just completely, you know, new GM, new head coach, start fresh? Would we be having that conversation?
I do. I mean, yeah, we would be, because the bottom line is the results are what matter. And in the end, like, people don't want to, they don't want to even hear who the coach is, who the GM is. I mean, would there be less pressure on the general manager? Of course. But here's the thing. They're late on doing the rebuild.
Yep.
So now you have to say to your fan base, hey, we're rebuilding. Well, they're like, well, you should have rebuilt 3 years ago. So even if you have a new GM there, the fans are going to be losing patience, because they're sitting there every Sunday. And I talked about this on the podcast with Dave. He's beat down. Like, Giants fans are beat down. They go into Sunday, they're like, ho-hum. They lose another terrible game, and you're able to just go, okay, they lost again, big deal, blah, 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 move on to the next thing. You know, and that's where the Giants fan base, for the most part, is right now. And it wouldn't matter who the GM is, it wouldn't matter who the head coach is, as long as the results on Sunday are you ending the day with an L, people are going to be frustrated and losing patience at this point.
Jordan, I know it's hard to play the hypothetical game, but based on people's feelings in the building about Joe Judge, if the Giants decide to move on from Dave Gettleman after this season, their next general manager will have to have a working relationship with Judge. He'll have to be able to work with Judge. Like, under no circumstances would the Giants consider finding another head coach.
Yeah, I really do believe that. I really believe that the way that this is going to end up going, knowing Joe Judge and the reaction he's gotten from everybody from the top down of the organization, is that he's going to end up having input in who the general manager is. They're going to pair him up with basically his own guy. I mean, think about all the New England guys, right? Patricia's paired up with a New England guy in Detroit.
Yeah, Quinn, right?
Paired up with a New England guy in Tennessee. Bill O'Brien was paired up recently with a New England guy in Houston. Like, Joe Judge is a strong personality. He's not going to go in his maybe what could be his only NFL head coaching chance and be paired up with some random guy. He's going to push hard, I believe, to try and get one of his own guys. And the Giants are going to say, okay, maybe this is the best way to go, because what we have been doing hasn't been working. And, you know, it's going to be, okay, here's your guy. It's the two of you. You're linked together. You have 2 or 3 years, whatever it is at that point, more years past this year, to get it going in the right direction, get it right. And I don't see how anything else makes logical sense at this point.
All right, Jordan. Listen, we got to run. We appreciate it. I'm sorry for the insults at the beginning. I thought it got cleaned up as we moved along, though. Thank you very much.
Jordan, make sure you stay away from Andrew Thomas, too. You know, it doesn't work out when you criticize offensive linemen that the Giants taking the top 10. Just saying.
Well, last time I didn't even criticize Eric Flowers, so this time I figure if I criticize Andrew Thomas, I might be in better shape.
Why did he attack you, then?
He took offense to, apparently, I did a video with somebody else, and the other person, I was just the host, the other person apparently criticized him, and he took offense to that. That was a year before he actually pushed me. So he, you know, it's one of those things where if you hold it in, when it comes out, it doesn't come out in the right way. I think that's what happened there.
Yeah, he was not happy, that's for sure. All right, Jordan, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Rick, you're dead to me. See you guys.
Love it.
The great thing, it wasn't even that it was funny, because it was funny. The delivery, though, was great. A 1987 rom-com.
He started the 1987 well American romantic comedy Roxanne.
You looked that up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is what happens when he's not on every week. It gives me too much time.
Oh, it was so well done. Now, this Saturday on ESPN TV, 4 lightweight title belts will be on the line in one match. Vasily Lomachenko.
It's a good fight tomorrow on Saturday. Good
will battle Teofimo Lopez in Top Rank Boxing's biggest fight of the year. Coverage again 7:30 this Saturday on ESPN. Today on ESPN Daily, Chief Safety Tyrann Mathieu has become the model defender in today's NFL. He's faced his doubters on the path from LSU to Super Bowl champion. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you got your podcast. I don't know if you guys have seen this from Jeremy Fowler at ESPN, the 3 destinations for one Le'Veon Bell. Rick, have you seen?
I did, yeah.
Dolphins, Bills, Chiefs. Jets' next 3 games, Dolphins, Bills, Chiefs.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? You can't make that up. So
over under 150 yards from scrimmage.
Oh, God. If he, I mean, a loss to any of those three teams is painful enough. If Lev Bell goes off from 125 combined or 150, like Chris said, Rick, I mean, how much lower does it get?
See, I look at that as a positive. I mean, that just that right there would just reaffirm what we all think. I mean, how much clearer does Joe Douglas need to see it that Adam Gase isn't the guy?
Doesn't matter. Adam Gase ain't going nowhere.
For now.
All right. Okay.
You think he's going to stay on?
Guys, you know I said he should have been fired after week two. You know I don't think Adam Gase should be the head coach of the New York Jets. I don't. I didn't like him when they hired him. But it's clear that he's entrenched in that organization. It's clear.
Oh, my
like
God.
Joe Douglas owes his job to him. Chris Johnson leans on him, relies on him to be his quote-unquote football guy, like Ricky alluded to yesterday. Like, guys, I don't know what it's going to take to oust this guy. And God forbid if the Jets go winless, if they go winless and they have the number one overall pick. I mean, I used to think it was outside of the realm of possibility that somehow Adam Gase could spin this on being Sam Darnold's fault and Mike Maccagnan's fault. Guys, I don't know.
He's trying his damnedest. I mean, that's what he's trying to do. I hope it doesn't work.
I hope it doesn't work either, but I don't know.
He's going to be back.
Nah, he's got to get fired.
I just can't envision that. I just can't.
I don't want him to be back. God, I don't think he deserves to have his job right now. All I'm saying is there's something going on over there. If it wasn't already obvious, what is it going to take for everybody to recognize that this is Adam Gase's doing?
Oh, God. Could you imagine?
If it's not already obvious, that's what I'm saying. I'm just asking, Dave. If it's not already blatantly obvious to you, what else is it going to take for everybody else in that organization to recognize that Adam Gase is the one that's responsible for the team being non-competitive this year?
Yeah.
I think it is blatantly obvious. I think the fact that it hasn't started, I mean, there's no one going to games. You don't have to worry about guys, you know, people not buying tickets, so it's not costing them money. I mean, it does kind of keep the Jets relevant that all we do is spend this time talking about how bad Adam Gase is.
So yeah, it's okay for your team to go out there and be non-competitive? Just because you can't have fans in the building, that's okay?
I don't think it's okay. I'm sick. Listen, I mean, we got to watch every single one of these games.
Yeah.
I got to watch Joe Flacco play quarterback again.
Yep.
I mean, have you seen some of these have you seen some of these numbers, man, with this Jets offense? They're embarrassing.
Oh, they're terrible.
They're terrible. Bottom
you watch
of the
every team, they go up and down for 400 yards. It's the Jets, and it's really, really bad. All right, we got CMT coming in about 5 minutes, so let's spend a couple minutes on the Yankees. Brian Cashman addressed the media yesterday. I thought the two most interesting sound bites, we'll take a listen to those. Firstly, his role in decision-making on this Yankees team.
We instituted our process that we've had in place now for, feels like, well over a decade, where everybody's going to have their say and suggestions for the manager to filter, and that's our process. And then ultimately, we try to find a way or suggested ways of, hey, you can climb this mountain this way, you can climb this mountain that way, or you can go basically what all the routes to try to get to the top of the mountain, which would be to victory. And then in the end, Aaron will decide with his staff what route he's most comfortable taking and what makes the most sense for him. And that's the way it's always been.
All right, so that's the decision-making that the Yankees have as far as what they're going to do in the postseason and decisions, and we know some big ones this postseason. And I thought this was interesting, and well, we can get into this right after we hear the soundbite. He says Aaron Boone is not a puppet.
I know there's that narrative. It's been asked several times about the manager being a puppet and all that. None of that's true. I've never ordered a manager to do anything specifically. Aaron would be able to testify to that, as well Joe Girardi and Joe Torre. They've never been directed at any time by me or our front office to do something that they didn't want to do. And simple as that. But I know I've said that before, and people want to believe whatever they want to believe. So I just know we have a good, strong, healthy, sound process, and one that we're proud of.
I'm sorry. It's hard for me to believe that is not a trickle-down of the analytics and Brian Cashman telling Aaron Boone. And he can say what he wants, but for me, and maybe I'm wrong, it's very difficult for me to believe that that's the case, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that during that 2.5-hour press conference yesterday, they were trying to drive home the fact that Aaron Boone has the autonomy to manage the lineup and make in-game decisions as he sees fit. But Aaron Boone has always said it's a collaborative effort. So, of course, Brian Cashman has input into what he thinks the game plan should be, even as you get into the game, what decisions should be made. So, I mean, it's the two leaning on one another. But what I can't gather from what Brian Cashman is doing is whether or not he's supporting his manager or if he's trying to grease the skids in case this team continues to underachieve based on the expectations that Hal Steinbrenner has for this group. Like, I don't know if he's trying to distance himself or if he's trying to have Aaron Boone's back. I can't figure that one out. So maybe you guys can help me.
Well, I don't know if he's speaking to us. I don't think he's speaking to the fan base. The way he spoke yesterday almost leads me to believe like he's speaking to the clubhouse, like to the players in that clubhouse, like trying to reassure him that their manager is the one that makes these decisions.
Okay.
Because I'd have a hard time. Listen. I would have a hard time. Like, you could tell J-Hap was pissed, and he's a veteran guy in that clubhouse. Like, I mean, I've been in locker rooms where decisions like that get made, and you're sitting in the locker room going, there's no way our coach just made that decision. That is not a decision he would make. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you get into the conversation like, well, who's pulling the strings here? Is it him? Who's in charge? Because, I mean, you can spin it any way you want. He's not a puppet, but, I mean, this isn't like you're strongly suggesting to Aaron Boone what he should be doing.
There's no way that Aaron Boone came up with the idea of Davey Garcia starting game two and then bringing in J-Hap. There's no way he did that by himself.
No way.
No chance.
There's no way that Aaron Boone sat in a room and thought to himself, you know what would be great if I start Davey Garcia, take him out after an inning, put in J-Hap, and if he did, if that was his, there's no way that the brass would have looked at it and said, this is a great idea. I'm sorry.
He'd be stupid not to do what they suggest anyway. Like, he hasn't won anything yet. If he wants to keep his job, I mean, he's going to do what they tell him to do. Because then if it doesn't work out, it's not his fault, it's their fault. There's no way he's doing what Dusty Baker did yesterday, keeping Zach Greinke in that game. What'd you do? I looked him in the eyes, and then I walked back to the dugout and prayed. There's no chance Aaron Boone does something like that. Because if it doesn't work out, it's going to be his ass.
That's right. He's not allowed to.
Well, because he hasn't won anything yet to do it.
Yeah, but if they don't win a championship in the next couple of years, it's going to be his ass anyway, Rico.
It hasn't been Dave Roberts. And I mean, you can point to certain decisions that he's made that have cost them World Series. I mean, he got an extension.
But why do we play this game? Like this is all Aaron Boone's decision making.
Because I think he's speaking to the clubhouse, man. If you're a player on a team, you don't feel like the coach is the one making the decisions. You've completely neutered your coach. And I think there was probably some conversation. Like, Aaron Boone, even if you were sold that idea with the analytics nerds and everything else, that this was a good idea, the second you sit down with J-Hap and he's not all in on the plan's got to change. Either we're starting J-Hap, he's going to pitch from the beginning of the game on, and then I'll have a short hook, or this is a perfect opportunity to see what Davey Garcia can give us. And then we can figure out what we're going to use Hap later in the series. Maybe we use him for game four. That's the feel stuff that goes into being a manager. I don't care what analytics tell you.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong, but just the idea that Brian Cashman is speaking to the clubhouse when he's giving that message about Aaron Boone and his role. I mean, even if you're a guy in that clubhouse, are you really buying that? I mean, they let Girardi walk because they wanted somebody that had a softer touch, but they also wanted somebody that was going to be receptive to more of the input that Brian Cashman in the front office and the analytics department had. Not that Joe Girardi didn't use analytics, but I'm just saying in terms of wanting someone that would be more open to the ideas of laying out the in-game plan prior to.
Yeah, but more, maybe, I mean, forget softer touch, but I think it's also Joe Girardi. I mean, the guy's won a championship. So, I mean, I'm sure there was pushback. I mean, there were probably healthy conversations.
That's what I'm saying. So you don't think the guys in the locker room in the clubhouse already know that a lot of the stuff that they're doing is based on what Brian Cashman and his crew is coming up with? Brian Cashman addressed the team in Buffalo at the end of that streak where they lost 15 out of the last 20.
I think they know, but I think they like Aaron Boone. But, I mean, there are certain things that happen that you just can't ignore. Like, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt that, you know what, this could be collaborative, but he's, you know, ultimately going to be the one that makes the decisions. If enough things happen. Like, you know, all of a sudden Brian Cashman's the one that comes in and addresses the team. Or we have this Fakakta game plan in game two. As a player on that team, as much as you like him, at some point you're like, no, this ain't right. Like Aaron Boone's supposed to have, like, he's supposed to protect us. He's supposed to have our
back.
There
should be more pushback if Jay Happ and Davey Garcia are both uncomfortable
exactly.
with that plan. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Again, it's hard to believe.
But the players know that Aaron Boone didn't come up with that himself, though.
Of course they do.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that there's anything that Brian Cashman could say about Aaron Boone and his ability to be, you know, or his autonomy to manage the team. I don't think there's anything that he can say to make the players feel differently about what they think his level of influence is in terms of how the game plan lays out.
No, very strange.
I just think that was Aaron Boone's opportunity to fight that, decision, and he didn't do it.
I don't know that he felt like he could have fought the decision. All right, let's get more into the Yankees.
I would feel a way about it.
Well, you might feel a way, but if you want to keep your job, you're probably going to be a good soldier.
No,
shut up.
I'm not saying Aaron Boone. If I was one of the players on the team,
yeah.
I would feel a way about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I can't go to Brian Cashman and tell him to go kick rocks. We're not doing this. That's what the manager's supposed to do. He's the in-between. You can't preach that you have our back, and then all of a sudden a decision like this is being made, and you don't have our
Boone's
back.
Boone's in a very tenuous situation. He's the middleman, and he can't look up and say, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. He won't be here next year.
No,
very
no, that's something that I would have a hard time respecting that.
No, I think that it's a difficult situation with the Yankees. All right, let's do a little CMT. We need a little lightening of the mood, a little music, a little CMT. Here we go.
All right, here we go. This is what we're going to do. You're going to love this. What I'm going to do is, because you ate up all my time yesterday with Nobservations, I'm going to put them together in a fun little Nobservation one with some CMT.
Okay.
You're going to love this. All right. Quickly, before we get into CMT, did this happen in Florida? I got to tell you the story because I was sent it, and I love it. Thought criminals were stupid? Well, I can one-up that. According to investigators, two men, 141 and 123, weren't very hard to find as they were breaking into stores, stealing cigarettes and lottery tickets. Why weren't they hard to find? Because they would leave things around during their crime spree, like a shoe, some tools, and best of all, one of them left behind his wallet with his driver's license.
Oh, come on.
So the deputies went to his house and knocked on the door. The guy confessed.
Oh, my God. He left.
14 charges combined. Him and his buddy. 14 charges combined for grand theft and burglary.
I'm going to say Florida.
Florida?
Yeah, that does sound like Florida to me.
Christopher Kenny.
I'm going to go along with Dave, but here's the thing. How many tools do you need to break into the store if you're only going to steal cigarettes and lotto tickets?
Yeah, why are you leaving your shoe behind?
Your wallet behind.
Why are you bringing your wallet in the first place?
Exactly.
In case you get pulled over by the police.
In case you get stopped. In case I get carded for the booze and cigarettes that you're stealing.
Right.
I am 21, in fact.
Santi. Florida or not Florida? What'd you say?
Florida man strikes again.
Florida man strikes again. You are correct. That is Florida. That is Ocala,
yes.
Florida.
Yes.
Here we go, boys. CMT. Dave's loaded AFC. Best team right now in the AFC. I'm going to give you the Kansas City Chiefs, the Baltimore Ravens, or the Tennessee Titans.
Right now?
Right now as we speak.
Tennessee? I'll marry them.
Ooh.
Let's go.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Right now, Tennessee's the best team in the AFC. And then I will cuddle Kansas City, and I'll trash Baltimore.
Look at this garbage.
Well, there's just no way I'm going to do that. So I am going to cuddle Baltimore
Bombs
as the best team in the AFC.
Wow.
I still think Lamar Jackson's got to figure out how to play from behind, how to win from the pocket consistently, but I think he'll do that as he matures. I am going to marry Kansas City because at his best, Pat Mahomes is the best football player on the planet. And I am going to trash Tennessee. I don't know, man. Still something about that team. I don't necessarily believe in them making a championship run.
Wow.
Just don't.
So I don't know how, though.
He doesn't believe in Ryan Tannehill.
AFC
he won't say it, but he doesn't. Because he doesn't believe in Ryan Tannehill.
All right.
Canty's not bought in yet. He doesn't realize the effect that Adam Gase has on quarterbacks. All right, most impressive win of Week 5. Was it the Raiders beating Chris's Kansas City Chiefs? Was it the Dolphins destroying San Francisco in San Francisco, or was it Dave's favorite Tennessee Titans in what they did against Buffalo?
Okay, well, that's where I'll give Tennessee credit. I'll marry them just because when you don't have the opportunity to have preparation like they did, only having two practices and then going out and demolishing an undefeated team, I mean, just embarrassing them when you're the only game on television that night. That was impressive to me. 42-16, that'll get you married as the most impressive victory.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle the Raiders win over the Chiefs. I just think that was big for Derek Carr in proving to everybody that he could push the ball downfield because they out-chiefed the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was big play after big play after big play. And for an organization and a head coach that's been kind of non-committal on Carr, I thought that win went a long ways to solidifying him and his position for the Raiders. And then what was the other game?
Miami-San Francisco.
You can
Miami
trash that. Trash that.
Look at this garbage.
Yeah, I'm also going to trash Miami. Not that it wasn't a nice win. It was. But San Fran, outside of playing the Jets and Giants, hasn't shown a whole heck of a lot this season. So I'll trash Miami.
This garbage. Look at
I'll
this
cuddle
garbage.
Tennessee.
Bombs and
great
win.
Seeds. But what the Raiders did, going into Kansas City, and putting up a 40 spot on the Chiefs and beating what we all thought was by far and away the best team in the NFL, that's marriage material. I'll marry them.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
All right, we have time for one more or no?
One more, yeah, go ahead.
All right, here we go. Sexiest game of week six. Sexiest game. Just. I mean,
you're not going to put Giants Washington here, are you?
No, I was going to put, actually, Jets Miami. Let me erase that quickly. I'm going to give you Cleveland at Pitt. I'm going to give you Green Bay at Tampa Bay. And Kansas City at the wounded Buffalo Bills.
All right, I'm gonna marry Kansas City and Buffalo. You know, Buffalo was kind of wounded.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'd like to see how they rebound. I'd like to see how Kansas City rebounds. Those are two high-powered offenses. I'll marry that one. I'm going to cuddle Cleveland
bombs and
Pittsburgh.
Seeds.
I think it's a great game, and I think Cleveland might be for real. And I'm gonna trash Tom Brady. I don't think they're good. I'm sorry. You lose to the Bears? Awful. Awful. I think Tampa has real troubles. They almost lost to the Chargers, trailed that game 24-7. I'm going to trash it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm going to trash the Battle of the Bays as well. I am going to marry Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And I know Mike Thomas said he doesn't want any reality TV storylines, but there's bad blood between these two teams. And what they want to be is very interesting. I mean, the Cleveland Browns want to be a physical team that pounds the football on you, and the Pittsburgh Steelers' strength on defense is that front seven. So I just think that this sets up for a really interesting matchup. I'm going to marry that one. I'll cuddle KC and Buffalo.
Bombs
I think it's interesting to teams that are going to be in the playoffs, but I think both of these teams at their best, Kansas City's better. But I'll cuddle it.
All right, there you go, boys. Thursday edition, CMT.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.